This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
This episode is brought to you by Lightstream, the nation's premier online consumer lender. Lightstream offers low interest, fixed rate loans from $5,000 to $100,000 for practically any purpose. We thank them for making our show a possibility. Love is love if you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional
route. If he's up, the risk of talk, you would say. A lesbian.
Black queer human being.
We are two gay dads.
I am a transgender man.
Trans woman.
Bisexual, non-binary, single parent by choice.
Can I ever have nice things? I just want nice things.
He just got spit up on.
Hey, Jay.
Hey. Here we are again. A little overstock action. I have a rant. For today, I have a rant.
I'm ready for it. Bring it. What's your rant?
It's a small rant. I've had much bigger rants on this show before, like how people don't get up on the bus for children. That's a problem in my world. And everybody knows about this.
Are they supposed to?
Are you kidding? People are supposed to get up for three-year-olds on the bus, on public transit. Yes. Okay. You get out of your seats. Old people.
But they have good young legs.
Three-year-olds cannot hold themselves up. No. Anyway, okay. But here's my rant. Why don't folks read the entire email? What is it? I don't understand. I send an email with you put the subject header. And I swear to God, I think people literally just read the subject header. I don't think they go through and read everything that's in the email. And I don't send particularly long emails. But they don't read the whole email. Right?
I gotta preach on this because this is true. And I got to tell you, sometimes I don't read. I actually had a situation recently where I didn't read.
I know you don't always read.
I don't, because you send me emails. Is this to me?
No, it's not. It's not.
So I went somewhere. Oh, the doctor's office. I showed up two different doctor's appointments and she had printed it out and said, don't come again because it's not your appointment time. And she printed it out. And did I read past like the date? Oh, no. If Lord. I would have seen the time and the location so that I was wrong. Lord. So when I show up the next day at the wrong date and time, she says, I gave you the paper. And I said, yeah, but I don't read. And you know what she said? She said, I'm so sorry, ma'am. I can do. And I was like, no, I read. I know how to read.
Oh my God, you just blew out everybody.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know how to read. But she really, I said, I don't read. She thought I didn't read. I do read.
She also called you ma'am. So there's that. Yeah. There's a two double whammy right there. Yeah. Read emails and don't assume gender. That's it. That's all I want to say. Read the emails. Beulah reads the email every time. Beulah reads through every single thing. And Beulah tells me when there are typos. Beulah don't fuck around.
She's a mensch. She is a mensch. Yes.
E, you have discovered something new.
I have rediscovered the art of the dance.
I'm so happy for you.
I went to an arts conservatory in the 90s.
As did I.
One of the best ones in the land. And I was not the best dancer, but I know how to follow. I know how to do choreography. So I've started taking a Zumba class at my new favorite place, the gym that I go to. And I'm good if I can see, but I can't see and I can't wear these glasses because imagine these and sweat. Horrible, right? So the first two classes, I'm in the back and I can't see because there's a row of white women in front of me that... I'm not going
to
say...
No shade to the white women trying to make the Zumba happen.
But their rhythm is on the 1-3 and our rhythm, black people rhythm is on 2-4.
I just want note to everyone, the rhythm should always be on the 2-4. I'm sorry.
I couldn't see the teacher. So today I stood in the front of the class and I got the moves and people were like, wow, are you a dancer? Were you a dancer when you were younger? And I was like, no, but I realized even though I'm not a quote unquote dancer to them, I am
Cheetah Rivera. You're a Cheetah Rivera over there. Cheetah up there.
I was gonna say Felicia Rashad's sister.
Oh, okay, yes.
What's her name?
Debbie Allen.
I want to be Debbie Allen and fame. So that's what I'm working on now. And they're following me. They were following me.
The biggest morale booster you can give yourself as an ex-dancer. I used to dance. I dance professionally. I don't dance anymore, and my body is not in the dancing shape it used to be. Is going to a gym dance class. And getting all of the wonderful, wonderful compliments that come your way. It's the best. But I'm always in the front of any class because I'm so short.
Oh, that's right. You would have to be, wouldn't you?
I have to be in the front because then people would just stand right in front of you. Being short is tough.
Yeah, it's tough. But you can always wear heels in dance class. I think that's what
you should
do. I
still am shorter than everybody else. And I'm not wearing heels. I'm too old for that. All right. So before
we got to get on to our guests.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, my God. But before we do that, we have to mention Patreon. We have a Patreon community. You can become a Patreon member and you're going to get bonus content. Videos of most episodes dropped a day early. Some crazy behind the scenes shenanigans of E and I just trying to get our lives together. And anything else we can think about to put up there. We are doing our best to make it a really fun space. And so if you want to head to patreon.com/ovariestalk to join. And the levels start at just $2 a month. It's a really easy
now, y'all,
membership.
Come on. If you're listening to this podcast, you're getting all this entertainment, all this good stuff about the LGBTQI community, about the arts community, since we're both professional actors. I think that's worth at least $25 an episode.
So head on over to
patreon.com/ovariestalk to join. Because if you go to church and sit for this long, you pay in the pastor.
Oh, my God. But don't worry. We're going to keep bringing it to you for free. But if you want to support us.
Jamie is not happy with me right now.
No, I'm not. It's got to be said. It's got to be said. We got to keep it going. We need to keep it going. But all right, let's get into our guest. Oh, my God. Jessie's story. Okay, so Jessie and her wife got pregnant with twins really easily. Like, they weren't even sure they were ready to be parents. But boom, they got pregnant really easy. But even when things start off easily with our families, they don't always stay that way. And there's a little trigger warning here. We do deal with the loss of a child in this episode. So if you're someone who may be sensitive to this topic, you might just want to fast forward to the second half of the episode. But otherwise, we have a really wonderful conversation about grief and getting through the pain of something like that. But if it's something that you're not ready to hear, just want to let you know that that's coming up.
Absolutely.
And then, as if that's not enough,
tell them.
Jessie goes on to tell us about how practically everyone in her immediate family, like, you know, like mom, dad, like, but not everyone, but came out as LGBTQ. And she even wrote a book about it. Buckle up, y'all, because we cover a lot of ground in this one. It's a really awesome episode. So let's just do it. Beulah, darling.
What y'all want? I'm up here trying to roll the tape. Y'all don't know. Come on now. I'm going to roll the tape.
Beulah, roll the tape. Hi, Jessie.
Hello.
Hi, Jessie.
Hi.
It is so wonderful to have you here with our ovaries.
Yes.
My ovaries are delighted to be here.
That's wonderful. How are your ovaries feeling today?
Well, they're a little tired on account of both of my children have decided never to sleep through the night again. So,
isn't that fun?
Yeah, it's like a,
how
isn't
old?
That fun? They're 1 and 3.
Oh.
You're in it.
Yes.
Don't you love that sound?
We know. We know where you're at. We know.
Yes, honey.
And we're going to get into all of that.
All of that.
Jessie, we need to hear your 30-second elevator pitch about why you are here to talk with If These Ovaries Could Talk, the Queer Families podcast today. On your mark, get set, go.
Well, I will say that I am a longtime listener, first-time caller, by which I mean, I didn't call you. I joined your studio, but I have listened to your show since my wife and I started our path to creating our family. I think it was born around the same time as your show, and it has been very important to our family. But also, Jamie, I'm here because everybody in my family is queer, and it's not an exaggeration to say that. I really like to try to out-gay other people's families, and what I've learned in trying to do that is actually we can out-gay everybody's family because there are a lot of families that are very, very queer. But I wrote a book about my family that is coming out later this fall. It's called The Family Outing, about how we all, my father, my mother, my sister, my brother, and I, how we all found our way out of the closet and what happened when we did. So.
I love it. We read the book. It's an amazing story.
And congratulations.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful book.
Thank you.
It really is. Gorgeous. I literally, like, 20 seconds ago finished the book because kids and it's hard to finish a whole book, so it's in my mind, like the story in the book and your family story, and it's a tremendous story. But before we do that, we gotta go into your little family's story.
Sure.
How you and your wife,
that's right,
created your family. Where'd you meet your wife? How'd you meet your wife?
Oh my goodness. My wife is the greatest human being I know. And that is more so 11 years after we first met.
Congrats.
What's
that lesbian life?
I feel like the congrats is worthy because anybody who has ever tried to sustain a relationship realizes that the work is in the sustaining, and that is also where the joy is, right?
Yes.
It is work.
I think that's a TikTokable moment. I don't know, but you know, that's a TikTokable moment.
TikTokable moment. That means that I would actually have to learn a lot about TikTok.
I'm trying.
That's for a future episode. But yeah, so my wife, her name is Frances Clayton, and she is from Tupelo, Mississippi, which is a small town in Northeast Mississippi. She's not just from Tupelo, she's of Tupelo. Her entire family lives there and loves it. And she came up for grad school with plans to return to it. And I got in the way of that. And when I met Frances, it was, I would say, a little bit later into my adulthood. I was already in my mid-30s. And I had done relationships. Well, let's just be frank. I hadn't really done relationships successfully at all until that point. I had dated the same type of person over and over again. It really hadn't worked out. So when a friend set me up with Frances, I knew about myself, I was a person who dated these like super hyper career focused type A people, usually from the Northeast, probably from a city. And this friend said, oh, you know, like Frances is great. She's from the deep South. She's a social worker. She wants to have children, which I definitely did not want to do. I think you guys would be great together. And I thought, and I was like, Kate, what do we have in common? And then I was like, oh, Kate, I get it. This is the other lesbian you know, isn't it? And Kate was like,
Kate was like,
oh, yeah, no, it's true. This is the other one I know. But you guys would be great together. Of course, the joke was on us because as soon as I met Frances, she got me and she was delightfully good to me. And so we started down our path together, right? Very tentatively, as I had U-hauled it, as you guys used the term, with so many people and it hadn't worked, but I really did my very best to try to take it very slowly. And I understood that there's so many things that were different about us. Chief among them was that I planned and articulated that I would never have children. I did not feel called to do it, did not want to do it.
Like your whole life?
Yeah, like starting sometime in my early adulthood.
Uh-huh.
I think that part of it was just fear and a way to get around something that you don't think, you don't know if you're going to be able to have, is to just decide you don't want it. Because if you don't want it, you never have to grieve not having it if it doesn't play out, right?
You know, that's something that comes up a lot on our show. A lot of folks say the same, similar to what you're saying, is was just never really on the table for me. And so I just kind of let that dream or that idea go.
Yeah. And also, I became frustrated with the general idea that to be a woman in your 30s is to want children. I felt caged by that. It wasn't how I experienced my 30s. And I saw a lot of people around me racing to find that for themselves, sometimes racing into relationships that didn't work, sometimes making really hard decisions around having children.
Jesse, I'm going to need you not to call me out right now. Hey. I'm going to need you not to call me out. Okay. I think you're speaking all of our language right now.
But you know what I was thinking as you said that, Jesse? I was thinking, oh, that's all her. That's all Jesse's heterosexual friends who were jumping into it. But no, I guess not.
No.
Because E jumped right
just
in.
Just jumped. Didn't even look to see if there was water. It turned out to, yes, Jesse, please.
7 or 8 years in, she said, well, you know, I am in my late 30s. It's time. I'm ready to have a kid. And I was like, what?
Boom.
Oh, we haven't talked about that in a while. I thought that was like off the table. Like, no.
Relationships, and man.
She was like, no, it's time. It's time. And so then I thought about it. And this, guys, sorry, don't mean to gender you.
You can say guys. I'm working on y'all. Oh, you have a wife from Mississippi. It's easier for you. Y'all.
I feel like I've become accustomed to y'all. I like y'all. Y'all is like a great term. It's a great term. Yeah. Right? So, y'all, it's all in my head at this point. It's totally an intellectual decision. And the thinking is, okay, the most important thing I need to do in this life is to be authentic to myself. The second most important thing I need to do is honor my partner's needs. And as long as they don't clash with my needs, I need to make space for them, even when they're uncomfortable. This is like solving an algebra problem in my head, how I got to children. I was like, okay, X times Y plus Z equals, okay, we can have kids.
Wow.
And I kind of thought, well, it'll take a long time. You know, this is a science project. I'm listening to If These Ovaries Could Talk. And, you know, because that's what we started to do. We were like, okay, we're going to have kids. Let's figure out how to do it. Like, where can we learn?
Well, I know from reading your book, you are a researcher. So I feel honored that we are a part of all of, because you know a lot more about queer literature than I do, to be honest, to be real, because the names you dropped in your book, I was like, oh, I should probably read that person's book. Oh, I should probably.
Honey, I got highlights. I was like, I think we should know about this.
Oh, bless you. So, you know, we did the things. We chose a donor. We really tried to be, to not get caught up in the things. We felt like we could spend forever trying to concoct the perfect version of like genetic connection that would somehow mask all of our terror about just generally being parents.
The search for Superman. Here you go.
We did not want to do that. So instead, we sat down on a Sunday afternoon with a bottle of wine, each poured ourselves a glass, privately made a list of 10 donors with the bank we were using. We used California Cryobank. Then we put them next to each other and realized that at least 4 on the list were the same. We pulled those 4 and we were like just worrying over them. And then the funniest thing, right? We you could pay a little extra and then you could hear this little interview with them, like a 5-minute interview. And that was the thing that took away all of the uncertainty and added knowing. Really?
It was just him speaking. I don't know if there was no interviewer. It was just him answering some questions that he had read or something. I don't remember, but that was the, because we were between two for so long. And then it was finally when we listened to that, I was like, that's him. That's the one.
Completely. Yeah. Completely. It was like, oh, that's a guy I know versus, oh, I definitely don't know that person.
Right.
And I can't articulate beyond that why. That was just that. And then we didn't overthink it. We were just like, okay, that's it. I really thought in that day in late fall of 2017 that we were still several years out from understanding what it would mean to be parents. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we got started. My wife was going to carry. And in late January, she got pregnant. Whoa. And then in March, we went in for the ultrasound. We were so excited to hear the heartbeat. And they were like, hey, there are two heartbeats.
OMG, you went from not wanting a baby at all to getting pregnant as quick as some heterosexuals do, and then
with twins.
And then having two.
I just remember my wife looked at me in the doctor's office and said, don't leave me. And she was serious. And then a little more than halfway into the pregnancy, I remember the appointment. My wife and I went in for the ultrasound. The babies were 21 weeks old. And they said, oh, one of your babies is tracking small. He's probably not going to make it. And that was terrible. And it was the moment that I became a parent in a place other than my head. It was like the parenting in my head just sunk right down to my heart. And we took this information, and it wasn't even just that they said he's probably not going to make it. At this point, we knew that we were having two children who were assigned male at birth. They were starting their life as men, boys. But it was the unknown. It was we don't exactly know. So what we want you to do is we want you to come back every week and let's see what happens. But just so you know, every time you come back, it's likely that we will discover that one of the babies has passed. And then we're going to have to think about how to manage for the other.
Oh, my God.
So
what a nightmare.
Every week we would walk across the park. We hit 22 weeks. And once you hit 22 weeks, you enter a window where, you know, early deliveries can survive. And so then we hit 23 weeks and we tracked the size of the babies, and one baby was growing really well and one baby was not growing. And we hit 24 weeks and the doctors basically said to us, listen, very shortly, there's going to be a choice to deliver. And the rough thing about this choice is that the decision that's right for one baby is wrong for the other. If you deliver early, you have the best chance of helping baby B. His name is Aster. But it makes the chance that baby A will have issues much higher. His name is Jude. And we can't make that decision for you. And so we went home and we puzzled and we worried, and we came back at 25 weeks and they said, well, now we really need to talk about this. We need to know when you want to deliver. And the doctors were so great. And this one doctor said to us, look, don't ask too many people about this decision. If you have a spiritual leader in your family of any sort, ask them. But really, you're never going to be happy with your decision. No matter what decision you make, you're going to be unhappy with it. So go home, talk to each other, and make it, and let me know. So we got to week 27. We started calling that doctor at 10 p.m., and he would take our calls at home with his own four kids because we were that family in the doctor's office.
Oh, that is really heartening to hear that there was a doctor out there that was really there for you.
Oh, my gosh. We worked with this practice on the Upper East Side, MFM, that I'd recommend in a heartbeat. And it just felt like all the doctors were just on our team, and it was a team. And so at week 28, we decided to deliver. You know, at that point, it seemed that for Jude, his risk of serious complications was less than 10%. And Aster was still with us, so it seemed like it's time. And we went in and we had a tour of the NICU. We saw the baby bays where each baby would be. Frances, my wife, took a medication to help the baby's lungs. We went home over the weekend. We were going to come back on Monday and deliver. We came back that following Monday, and the baby's heart had stopped over the weekend. We lost him just before 29 weeks. And if I recount that with great specificity, it's because those hours of those days will probably be the hours I remember for my entire life. They were just, they stretched me as a human. They sunk us into parenthood. And then, y'all, then there we are. And they're like, well, you don't have to cross the street to the hospital. Actually, now you just go home. And we're like, what? And they're like, now you are no longer, you know, now you are a single pregnancy. And now we need to try to keep Jude growing as long as we can. And so you need to carry your babies home and figure out what happens next. And y'all, that was a wild month.
That is crazy because Aster, right?
Aster has passed.
Aster's still in there. But
he's still there.
Is it too risky at this point to, you can't do anything other than wait?
I mean,
I suppose.
It's the best thing for Jude. And at this point, we need to really focus on Jude. And we're also paralyzed. And also, we have to move out of our house that week. We have sold our little Upper West Side one bedroom, but didn't get around to the point of figuring out where in Brooklyn we were going to live because we were too busy going to the hospital.
Before you move forward, I want to take it back to the moment when you found out that Aster wasn't growing. And you said all of a sudden parenthood, the idea of parenthood went from my head to my heart, which is, I love the way you phrased that. And it just struck me because I think for me, for both of the pregnancies, the one my wife had and the one I had, each pregnancy, even after I was already a mother to one child, the idea of that baby being a real being didn't hit me until after they were out. And I think days after they were out. That hit me in a way. And then all of a sudden now you're dealing with this and the two babies are in there in utero and you're stuck.
It's right at that point where, and I've never carried a baby. There is a foreignness to motherhood, that this part of motherhood for me. But it was right at that point where I could lay my hand on my wife's belly and feel each of them kick. And that did a thing for me. I was like, there are humans in there. And then suddenly the choices that we had out in front of us were choices that we had to make where we were responsible for those lives.
Mm-hmm.
So then we had another 5 weeks before Jude arrived, and we had to figure out what should happen. And so we did a whole lot of research. We started to research what happens when you're going to deliver a baby that you don't bring home. And somebody was like, oh, you really need to meet this doula. This doula specializes in helping to deliver babies that parents aren't going to be able to bring home. And so they're a birth doula, but also a death doula. And so we were like, great, sign us up. And, you know, we had an unusual circumstance because there were twins. Most people who have a stillbirth, which is what we had, they don't know it's coming. It just arrives and it's a surprise and it's terrible. But we knew it was coming. And we didn't know what we were going to face in that moment. And so we began working with this woman, Jay, who came into our lives and helped us with all the things doulas help people with. But also, when you have a stillbirth, you have to do all of this stuff. It feels like you're like, what? The worst thing that I can imagine is happening to me. And also, I have to learn how funeral homes work. And I have to like make plans for what I want to have happen upon the death of this person that I haven't even got to know yet, but I love. Like, it just seems so like unfathomable.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were sort of walking up to that birth in like the sleepwalking fog. You know, there were friends who came over and unpacked our house for us. I was still mostly going to work every day. My wife, who is a social worker and runs a daycare, was going to work every day with small children. We were waiting to become parents. And in that time, we learned that I could be on Jude's birth certificate. Aster received a stillbirth certificate. But unless we were married, I couldn't be on the stillbirth certificate. And so 10 days before the birth, we went down to City Hall on a Monday at 11 a.m. and tied the knot. That was super fun because, you know, when when you go in to get married and it's a heterosexual couple and somebody's 9 months pregnant, I imagine you get the eyebrow raise, like, oh, we know why you're here.
Right.
But then when you go in to get married and you're, you know, a queer couple and somebody, I mean, Frances with twins, she was huge, right? Like, huge. We go in there to get married. I feel like, you know, it's just it, like everybody's like, wow, that's wow, right?
Just trying to figure you out. Nobody can figure it out.
Right.
Do you think that whole birth certificate thing, is that the same for heterosexual folks who aren't married?
So I don't know. I don't know.
That's a great question.
It is a great
question.
Anybody
at home?
Yeah, one of the reasons I don't know is because I just couldn't tolerate knowing that information at that time. And so we let this doula manage that part of it for us, which was a great gift to us.
Yeah. I mean, and you shouldn't know. You should have been just dealing with what you were dealing with. But anybody at home, please tell us what the answer is to that, because that's some bullshit. Okay. Anyway. Okay.
Well, so then, I mean, this was so cool. So the birth came early, was, you know, came a few weeks early, was unexpected when it arrived. We had to sort of rush to the hospital. My wife pushed out both babies in the space of 15 minutes. I mean, she was so strong. Like, she was amazing.
I would have thought that they wouldn't have her push them out because it might be traumatic. Right. That's what I was thinking. I thought it was going to be a C-section.
Here's what they did. They, and again, incredible team of doctors, they let us drive, right? And so we began to work with this doula. And this doula focused so much on Frances's experience and our collective experience and what we wanted it to be. And what it came down to was she wanted to be in her body and let her body do what it knew how to do. That was her perspective. And I should say, I have, I don't see a rank order to like your approach to giving birth. I think anybody who gives birth, no matter how you do it, like that is the right way for you to do it and way to land it, like period.
Yes. Snaps, but
what my wife wanted was to have the opportunity to let her body do it. And then we worked with, guys, y'all. We worked with this feminist funeral director out of Brooklyn, this amazing woman, Amy Cunningham. She went to the hospital before in advance, and she scoped the place out. And she helped us. We wanted to have a small ceremony for Aster. But we also had the challenge of, when a still baby arrives, the still baby goes to the morgue, and the morgue is full of all kinds of germs, and they can't bring that still baby back up to a room. You move, you know, through the world, and we wanted time with Aster.
Yeah.
But we had this living baby that we wanted time with too, and we were really working through, like, how do we, in those first moments, figure out how to be parents to the baby that we say goodbye to and parents to the baby that we prepare to bring home, and how do we be what both babies need and what we need in the same moments? And she worked with the hospital so that Aster never went to the morgue. He was in this, it's basically like a new baby cot that has sort of cold packs underneath it that not all hospitals have, but the hospital had never done this. And it meant that we were able to be with both babies, and even to take some photographs of both babies so that if later in his life Jude would like that, that's something that we have for him. We have no idea how we feel about those photos, by the way. Don't ask any. We are so unevolved. Is that even a word? We don't know how we feel about that.
That they're just in a drawer somewhere.
They're in a drawer. Exactly.
But the forethought to think that, like when you just mentioned that for Jude, I'm like, oh yeah, wait. it's the juggling act that you had to do at that time, emotionally, psychologically, physically.
Y'all, it was a weird time.
I can only imagine.
You know, and we have these great families, and you know, we went into labor early, and I called everyone, and they were in Oregon, Mississippi, and Massachusetts, and somehow within 6 hours, they were all in the hospital. Like, everybody showed up. I don't even know exactly how that happened. And we were able, you know, to have our families witness Aster as well, and that was really important to us. Mm-hmm. And then we went home with baby Jude, and baby Jude, of course, was colicky. Like,
of course,
looked around at other people with their new babies, and
That was
not the model we brought home, right? We just like.
I'm right here with you, Jesse. I am right here with you. Even when I interview people who have had those idyllic babies, something inside of me feels this deep, deep, I don't know if hatred is the right, a blackness in my chest that I have to hold back.
You know, I didn't what?
That. I know, as, E. I know.
I know, but I have to say, what goes through my head, and this is horrible, but I'm going to say it. Were they really that bad?
Oh,
but my son also was a sleeper. Like, he was the little angel baby. So I don't know what's coming, but.
Watch out what you say, E. Watch out.
Those are the sleeper hard babies. Like, you don't know because they're not hard until they're like 15, but it's coming back for you, E.
It is coming. I'm not doubting it. But you know what? I think that I know I'm not the only one, because I have friends who say, well, if the baby was colicky, you just do these things. And we get very flip about it. You know, we all get flip sometimes about situations we just don't understand because it's outside of a process.
But all I remember is that my wife and I had different strategies, and we'd trade off. We'd be like, okay, this is your hour. I'll take the next hour. You take the next hour. And my strategy was to basically practically ace wrap him to my chest with one of those baby wraps, sit on a yoga ball, turn the white noise up to like the very highest volume, and bounce up and down aggressively like I was at a rave continuously for my hour. And then usually it would bring him down, but then up again and down again, up and again, right?
You know what, E? You never know what unexpected costs are going to pop up when you start your baby making process. If you're an L, a G, a B, a T, a Q, a plus, I, a A, right? Am I wrong?
Facts.
I mean, you might need to shell out more money for sperm, find a new egg donor, for another IVF retrieval, or like IVF. In Jesse's case, hire a death doula. Like, there's so many things. But man, these LGBTQ journeys are fraught with all kinds of roadblocks. So it might be a good idea, before you start the journey, to think about getting rid of any outstanding debt you may have.
Right, before you start on this road. If you're getting ready to gear up for this next chapter in your life, or even a chapter that might take some extra funds, you know, like buying a house, paying for a wedding, buying a car to fit your all of a sudden overgrown family full of beautiful foster children and adoptive children and all the children. Have to
bios
fit in the
car. And non-bios and all
bios,
of us.
Bios, everybody, right? Everybody got to fit in the car. And so you need the minivan. I recommend the Honda Odyssey. Anyway, we have a way to help you get rid of any high interest credit card debt that you've accumulated up till now.
Yes, a credit card consolidation from Lightstream can help you pay off your credit cards and lock in a low fixed interest rate. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. And let's be real, sometimes we need that money like yesterday.
Truth, honey. It takes a village, y'all. Just for our listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/OCT.
That's lightstream.com/OCT.
Disclaimer, subject to credit approval, rates range from 5.73% APR to 19.99% APR and include 0.5% auto pay discount.
Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/OCT for more information.
That's our story to parent. And I'll say we have thought and continue to think a lot about our own grief and how we make sure that our grief is not also our son's grief by virtue of inheritance, that he doesn't grow to understand his birth as the saddest day of our lives, which, you know, it actually is the saddest day of our collective lives. Also the happiest. And that's where the mind fuck is.
Right.
Excuse my language. And so we got involved in this amazing support group, this in real life support group, and met all spring with a handful of other families, a half dozen other families who had stillbirths. Because our commitment to ourselves in Jude is that by the time he had language, we would have worked our way through this enough that we would be able to talk about this with him without crying. So that it would always be something he knew. And it would always be something that we as a family could just have all of the feelings about.
You know, in our pre-call, Jesse, that you said something that sticks with me. Still, you said you ran at your grief.
Yeah.
And that's And that's exactly what you did. I just love the way you phrased it. You just ran at it. You went into it head first, right?
That's amazing. And it's courageous as hell.
Yes.
Like, how do you run into it?
I mean, I said run into it, but maybe I meant like really tried not to drown within it. Like there was a long doggy paddling period. But you know, there is a quality to grief that's fairly universal, so that even if you haven't had this experience, many people have had an experience that have left them like, you know, I was working at this tech company that had these little booths where you would take your phone calls, and I would like have 2/3 of my day, and then I would go into that booth, turn toward the wall of it, and just like sob, 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 then try to like wipe my eyes so they looked normal and complain about allergies for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. Right? That was a lot of the first year.
It's waves. Right? It just comes at you.
It's waves.
You gotta let that wave,
it's circular,
overtake you.
And also for any families who have been through this, your grief and your partner's grief are not on the same timeline. They do not talk to each other. Nobody coordinates them up above to make sure they're in line with each other. And so somehow you also have to scrounge up the compassion involved in letting your partner have their own experience. Nobody tells you how to do that, and that is hard.
And you're still speaking about your wife as the most amazing person you've ever known. To go through all of that and to still be so in love in the eyes. You know what I mean? Like, you guys are doing all the work. So,
yeah, but this it's was amazing the thing. To me. You know, this was the thing where this experience shaped us into a family, you know, 8-9 years in. Mm-hmm. This is the moment where we're like, oh, this is it for us. And I feel lucky that it did. And that isn't to say that we, you know, we felt sad differently about it. I felt like it was a great trauma for me. My wife felt like it was a great sadness for her and was loath to take on the word trauma. And over time, I've let go of the word trauma. And that's because we got so much support. We both got so much support around it that it was a great, 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 great sadness and continues to be. But we worked all the way through it. And by the way, I still see other people's 3.5-year-old twins on the playground and decide not to go to the playground that day. I still feel like, for me, it is manifested in this visceral anger at people who have twin boys, especially, and are casual about it. Or, you know, social media can be so awful. For whatever reason, Instagram recently has gotten into sending me all of these reels of twin moms where they're like, twin life, this is so hard. I'm like, why are you doing this, Instagram? Like, what's your algorithm telling you?
Stupid Instagram.
Mark Zuckerberg, I need you to control Meta and IG. Burger.
Get on it, E.
Yeah, I'm on
stupid Instagram. I'm sorry. Yeah. That sucks. And I totally get that. Oh my God. It's gotta be a whole journey.
You've kind of got us speechless. Like there's so much. And just no, I honestly wanna honor it and give it space. I am in awe with your courage, you and your wife. And there's someone else, correct?
Now you have another one.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was trying to get.
Poor Camille. This is the story of Camille's life, by the way.
But you know what?
Oh, and who? Oh, yeah, I got a daughter. Oh,
that
right.
happens to the not oldest. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, always. Yeah. I'm the oldest. We don't have a picture book for the second at all. Anne's on break this week. She's like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make that picture book for him. We're like, So tell us that. And then we got to talk about,
I mean,
this is like only like a tip of the iceberg of your story.
I know. I feel like the book is a whole nother episode.
Okay. But look, thank you for sharing the story. And I'm going to say one thing. When it comes to stillbirth, and you guys so beautifully said we're speechless, but also you so beautifully made space to talk about this and to talk about it rather than to like back up, take a deep breath and hope that it will be over soon, which is how most people deal with talking about the death of babies. And so you, if you are a listener, if you folks, you will know people who have this happen to them, maybe not exactly like this, but who lose babies. And I just found that the most helpful thing to me was to name it, to talk about it. Because you know what? Like, I, as a parent, am thinking about it 100% of the time. Use my son's name. Jamie, thank you for doing that and doing that early. Like, keep talking about it because we keep thinking about it. And that mm-hmm. that is sort of, you know, that means that Camille already knows who her brother is and what his role right. is in our family. And that's sort of how we think about it. So Camille showed up when she was due after having a perfectly uneventful and healthy pregnancy. We had to coax her out. My wife was induced. And she has been robustly declaring herself ahead of schedule, like, since she was born. She walked before 9 months. She is 17 months now, and she's like a force of nature. She's wonderful.
That's the way it should be.
She's wonderful.
It's the way it should be.
And are you getting sleep?
No, we don't sleep. The second baby did not sleep. She does not sleep. She naps less than her brother. She never slept through the night. Never, ever slept through the night. And somehow in the middle of that, also, I sold a book, which, by the way, just like future planning, don't write a book and have a baby the same year. Like, choose one, like, do that one. But like, both is just a bad idea. So,
yeah. We have a tendency to do that. I started a podcast and had a baby the same month, basically. That was dumb. All right. So now we know about your little family, we're calling it.
Yeah.
The immediate family?
The immediate family. Let's go with the immediate.
Let's talk about this book. Okay. The Family Outing. It's called The Family Outing because the whole family
came out.
Comes out. Except one.
I love that you're doing the ish in your head. You're like, they came out, ish.
They all had a story.
The journeys, man. The journeys. Okay. But where you had me, and I made a note, is when you mentioned things like, or in the beginning, the falling for straight. I don't want to give it away. Falling for straight girls, Cabbage Patch Kids. First of all, I feel like this book was written for me and my age. So thank you. I don't know if that was done on purpose, but it was so highly relatable.
If I may, like, what is your age, if I may?
Oh, 48.
Hey, 47 right here. Same. Yeah. Hey. So you understand Cabbage Patch Kids. You were.
I do too. Yeah. So, Jesse, tell us about the book. Tell us about the story, what people can expect when they read your book. And it's kind of an enlightening journey.
Well, thank you.
That you kind of lay down.
Thank you. So, I'll start by telling you that when I came out to my closet, when I came out to my family, when I came out of my closet to my family, I was in college and mm-hmm. we were driving home from college. My dad was driving. My mom was sitting in the passenger seat. I had my seatbelt on. We were all looking forward. It seemed like the right time to do it. I just said, you know, I think that maybe I could be. Maybe I'm gay. I'm gay. Right. And then there's this long pause. Right. Ish. Exactly. And my mom cried. And then she, then she was like, well, like, I think your cousin Charlie's gay because he cries a lot. Yeah, cousin Charlie was 11 at the time, but okay. But then she said the right thing, right? She was like, you know, we love you. We're gonna get through this, as if this is a mm-hmm. thing to get through. But we'll get through this.
Right.
My dad says nothing, and okay. So the next morning, I'm in the kitchen and I'm like eating my cereal, and he comes through the kitchen and he says, "Oh, you know, I thought I was gay once too." He's like a buttoned-up lawyer going to his law firm.
That's such a mic drop moment.
And I look at him. I'm like, what?
Wait, how did you even say? What?
So I was like, Dad, what did you do? And he said, oh, you know, I married your mom. And then he walked out of the kitchen. And folks, right there, I was like, oh, heck, Dad's gay. But it was a few years.
I don't mean to laugh, but.
You should laugh. I mean, you know, like. Those moments, right? And and what I didn't know was going on in his head right then is, oh, heck, if my daughter is going to confront this in herself, like, at some point I'm going to have to, too. And several years later, he did come out, not because he wanted to. I like to say he got kicked out of the closet or, like, dropped or shook out of the closet.
He got dropped with a kick. I mean, I read it.
Drop kicked out of the closet.
He got drop kicked out of that closet.
When my sister discovered some messages that he was sending online.
Clear your browser histories, people. Clear your browser histories.
Or don't keep secrets.
I mean,
yeah, there's that.
It's just easier to clear your browser.
It is history. And we talk about it, but no one really does it. And we're always surprised.
Always.
Always.
But I think when there are things that are such secrets that we can't confront, but we ultimately need to in order to survive. We leave clues on purpose. Like we can't not.
Because it's kind of sick. You know that phrase, you're only as sick as your biggest secret. Mm-hmm. It's something that's eating and pulling, even if it's quote unquote, just in a subconscious way.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's totally right.
Yeah. So your dad eventually comes out.
Yeah, my dad comes out of the closet. My mother, in beginning to deal with my father's coming out of the closet, confronts some pretty serious violence that befell her in her teenage years and that she was never given an opportunity to talk about. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after, my sister announces she's bisexual, which we're all like, ha ha ha, you're not bisexual. And then she married a woman. So joke's on us. And then my brother came out as transgender. Mm-hmm. And this all happened in our family in the space of really just a few years. And
But it had been brewing.
It had been brewing.
Your whole family's life.
And so the book is, I mean, I hope that the book is the kind of page turner you pick up on the beach and can't put down again. And if it isn't that for you, just put it down and move on. It's okay. You don't, you know, but hopefully that's the goal.
Just tell people
that's
to keep reading.
Yeah. Oh, then just keep reading. Just keep reading.
And it's because you ask questions like, I thought it mattered. It didn't matter what happened to me. What was it? You said something about what happened to me. It was.
Oh, when you're in therapy, right? And you're just worried. You're like, if I can just understand what happened then I'll
to
feel
me,
better.
I thought it was an important question, but it wasn't an important question. It was more about what has happened around me. What is happening? And I thought that was a really interesting way. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I'm so glad that you did.
Yeah.
I think it's more about the emotional truth, right? Like the emotional truth of all of our lives matter so much more than the factual truths. And yet we spend all of this time trying to get the details of factual truth, right? Which is impossible.
Which no one remembers accurately anyway.
You know, nobody remembers.
On that point, what I always find so interesting is when we interview people, they are always telling me, well, we inseminated on a Tuesday. And then on the day that we found, that was a Wednesday. And I'm always like, first of all, I don't have that brain. I don't remember the days. But also, how do I remember
like that until I didn't. Something has been shifting because the boy is now, like, we talk about these fertility stories. I'm like, this sounds wonderful. Maybe we'll do this one day. Like, it's so far away.
I forgot everything.
Because it was 14 years ago, roughly. Yeah. You know what I mean? 13, 14 years ago. And all of the life that has happened with him in it has really overshadowed so much the little pieces. Because now he's a thinking human being who I like to talk to, as opposed to this cute thing I carried around, you know what I mean? And I bossed around. Now he's like, he's challenging. But, and I feel bad sometimes because I sometimes don't remember the birth story as well as I thought I would when it was happening.
But that brings to mind this point, though, that it's not about the details surrounding you. It's about
how you choose to show up with each other and give each other the benefit of the doubt when your details don't line up and honor each other's emotional truth in any given moment, regardless of the past.
Yeah, and one more thing I want to highlight is how you introduced your brother to the story. I loved the way you go through it, Jesse, because you can explain better what was going through your, because you have a transgender brother. So he wasn't always who he is now, but you introduced him as who he is now. But the way, I don't know how you did it. This, I would have grappled with this and I would have never written the book because I'd been like, how am I going to, well, how
and
do
did
I
you check in with him?
I checked in with him all the time and I still do. And by the way, I still get stuff wrong all the time. And he is a guy with so much grace and so much ability to allow me to get things wrong and gently educate me on the back end, right? That gives me the strength and the courage to make mistakes, which is not something that families afford each other easily, by the way. Mm-hmm. But look, my brother, for half the book, my brother appeared as a girl child to anybody who would have known him during those years. But the truth of his life is his identity as a boy. And so I needed to figure out how to write this book to honor everybody's experience when, like, my experience of being in sixth grade is that I had a little sister. That was my experience. But also to make his experience of his life central for his character. And his experience of his life was that he was a boy And that is a easier thing to say than it is to write. And so I decided that right from his birth, I was just going to tell you, the reader, what I was doing. And I just explained that there are things that are so gray. They're just mysteries. They're impossible to know. It's impossible to know, the way that I explained it was like, as a small child, I got really wrapped up in the concept of infinity. It almost undid me. Like the idea that you could keep counting forever. When I was 5, that was enough to make me cry so hard they had to send me home from school, which actually just tells you a lot about the anxious, weird kid I was too. And in the same way, my brother was born into a female body, and his experience of himself is that he is a guy. And when I asked him how I should refer to him, he's like, well, you just call me Evan. That's who I am. And I was so hung up on it. It was embarrassing. I was like, well, but this is my truth, but this is right. And then he just introduced the idea, like, all the shoes don't have to be in conflict. You can just decide. You can just decide that you're going to honor the thing that I'm asking, which is for you to call me by who I feel that I am.
And written with that and love and respect so palpable in the whole, like, I got emotional because the way I would hope to be referred to in that way during my journey. Whatever my journey is, it's all over the place. But I would, I think that was such a beautiful, it's just really beautiful relationship with your family in a lot of ways. I know y'all been through some stuff, but you know.
That's why I got the book contract. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But
thank God for that.
With
they're
Evan.
Like, ooh, a family that all came out and one of them is, well, sign this one up, right?
Like, come on, there's got to be more. No, just one more. Who are we going to do next? No, but yeah. it was beautifully handled. You know what I mean?
And I get the sense on the gender piece as well that like we're in the midst of a revolution when it comes to gender, and I am not on the front line. I am too old to understand it. I was socialized and came up in a culture where the thing that I can do is respect it and make space for it and keep asking it questions and keep trying to bring that conversation to the center of my personal world. And that is enough. That is something too that, my brother has taught me and teaches me. And I get really hung up on the needing to know still. I'm like, so like, were you a boy then? And it's like, why does that, like people who are not trans or who don't live in my community are constantly like trying to create some binary thing. Like it was this way and now it's that way. I was just always Evan, and I am Evan, and this is Evan, and you know Evan. Like, why do you need more of me? Why is this hard for you?
Right. You know what, though, my cousin asked? He's like, weren't you a straight girl back then? Like, their point. When you came to my wedding, were you a straight girl? Because he's my first, I love him with all my heart. I get, like, it's not, I don't take offense at it.
Yeah.
But I understand that he's trying to make sense in his mind. Like, I'm with you on the gay journey. But, you know, now the trans journey. But when were you? When did you hop over? I feel like people are expecting me to say, like, I cross over with John Oliver or whoever that guy is that crosses over. And it's not a cross. I wish
it
was.
It's not linear.
Right? It's not linear. None of it.
But then I think about your kid, E, right? And the world, your kids' peers, they don't need the binary. They somehow have, like, through osmosis, absorbed a different approach to thinking about how things need to be so that they're not stuck on the same things that I can't unstick myself from.
Right.
I just dropped my 8-year-old at sleepover camp for children of queer parents. So they're already amongst us.
Uh-huh.
This is the 8 to 10-year-old cabins, and there were 4 they-thems that set up their bunks. The 8 to 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
And my daughter was like, yeah, okay. You know, like, it is nothing. It is nothing, at least to this group of children that I know.
Beautiful.
It just is what it is.
Right.
Take it for what it is.
And there's courage and strength in choosing at any point in your life to cross those boundaries in any ways, big or small, right? And so, E, like, I think about the journey you're on, like, in some way, those young people, they make room for older generations to also go close to those boundaries and re-examine them and talk about them. And then as those older people do that, they make room for the younger people to like stage the revolution and it's coming.
Right.
It's sort of my big thought on it.
Yeah. And yeah. I also, you know, what's funny to be 48 and going through a journey where I'm coming out yet again and have been coming out yet again, I'm kind of left out of the revolution. And there's a piece of it that's accepting that too. Like,
yeah.
Yes, it's happening. Yes, I'm in the trans community. Yes, I'm going through what I'm going through, but I'm at the long end of the tooth of it. And this is not the exciting part of the journey for folks. Like, this is kind of like, well, at least you figured it out before you die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not totally provocative and sexy. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
It's just, Jesse, I feel like I could talk to you all
I know.
Day.
This
you
has too, been Jamie. Such a pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. This has been such a pleasure and an honor. And we're just so happy this finally, because this has been in the making of you coming on this show for like 4 years, 5 years.
Wow.
I started like DMing you like a fan on Twitter, being like, I love your show. You should do this. You should talk about that. You should talk about that.
Keep them coming because we're always looking for other, you know, ideas. But tell everyone where they can get the book, when it comes out. I believe it's coming out tomorrow when this episode airs.
You can get the book any single place you buy books. And also for those people with children or just those people with short attention spans, it exists in audio. Don't feel like you have to read it. Just buy the audio edition.
Ooh, yay. Okay.
There you go.
So go out and buy this book. It's going to be in the notes, in the episode notes, if you need a visual, and I'll link it out for you. But we are just so happy you came on to talk to us, and we loved your book, and we love you, and
thank you.
We rock.
Thank you so,
so
much.
So great meeting and talking to you.
I think we need to get drinks in Brooklyn at some point.
Or Jers. What are you talking about, Brooklyn?
The Jers.
Oh, God, with the Jers.
The Jers. Woo, that was a friggin' amazing story. That Jessie, yeah. Oh.
I know,
and she does so much. The book, the parenting, the wifing.
The podcast. Jessie does it all. So yes. Go out there and get that dang book, y'all.
Absolutely.
We put a link in the show notes for you so you can just go buy the book. The book should be out right now as we speak,
get
tomorrow.
Get the book. Read the book. And if you love this show and want to represent your love for us and our beautiful families, you need to head over to our shop and get some of these If These Ovaries Could Talk Queer Families podcast merchandise. We have all kinds of merch. And the holidays are just around the corner. You know, we're waiting for those pictures of the kids that are going to be us for Halloween. So many designs on the shop. You could probably find some stuff that mimics what you've seen us wearing. You can put the designs on any product in the store. T-shirts, mugs, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases, children.
Everything.
So go to the link in bio. Go to the link in our Instagram page. Get to the store.
If These Overs Could Talk. And don't forget to join us on Patreon to help us create this important queer content. You're just going to head to patreon.com/ovariestalk to sign up and get that bonus content.
On the socials, you go over to Ovaries Talk on the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook, and the TikToks. If These Ovaries Could Talk is also on the YouTube. Support the podcast and join our community on Patreon. patreon.com/ovariestalk.
Okay, Beulah.
I know she's talking so much. I'm sorry. I called you a she. I mean, they talking so much. I got to
you just and don't she eat. Okay. Well, without further ado, I think we've been rambling long enough. Eggs.
Ovaries.
Out.
Out.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
One more thing before we go that Beulah has reminded me. We have to say, obviously, a huge thank you to our Patreon members, as always, who help us make this show, and our episode sponsor, Lightstream. Check out their low-interest fixed-rate loans for practically any purpose.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouth-watering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.